HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Today I'm joined by Niamh Hannan. Niamh works for a company called Mindworks. And Niamh's a chartered psychologist, a coach, and she works with individuals and organizations to build resilience and improve well-being at work. Today we're going to talk about the very important topic of leadership well-being and how, as leaders, we can take care of ourselves. Niamh, you're very welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Brilliant. Niamh, maybe just to start off, why don't you do a far better version of what I just did and introduce what you do and maybe just give a bit more color to that.
Sure, thanks. I've been a chartered psychologist been working on a one-to-one basis, mainly in therapy, I have to say, for over 20 years. And I've switched now into coaching and don't do any more counselling. But alongside that, since 2004, I've been working in the wellbeing arena. So I've seen the inside of a lot of different offices all around Dublin and the Greater Leinster area. Not anymore, things have changed. I give a lot of talks and workshops and do trainings. At the moment, really, I work mainly with leaders. So in the areas of well-being, self-care, building resilience, and learning how to stay in a good place that's so you can have the best impact on your team.
Obviously, it's a really important subject now more than ever. But it's always important, irrespective of a COVID-19. We all have our own stresses. We all have our own responses to those stresses. For you, what have you seen that makes you believe that it's vitally important that leaders do look after themselves?
I think it's interesting because well-being has been, there's been an explosion in the well-being area in recent years in Ireland. But what I see is that there's a lot of well-being practices targeted at the general staff and employee level rather than targeting leaders. And I suppose, very often it's the leaders or it's HR who are organizing that for people, for employees, and maybe lunch and learn talks or different movements that they can get involved in, whether that's physical education and, or nutrition or so on. What I think is missing actually is at the leadership level, and I think it's hugely important because, research would indicate that, 7 out of 10 people who leave a job leave because of their direct line manager. So that relationship with the manager or with the leader is extremely important, and leaders have a huge impact on and engagement levels, but also on well-being levels within teams. So if we come back then to the leader, it's really important that the leader keeps themselves in a good place. So if a leader is stressed, if they're in bad form, that immediately people read that as soon as they, when you're in the office, they read that as soon as they come in the office, but you still can read that off Zoom or off the tone of voice on a phone call even. And that can set the tone then for people for the day. Or if people are afraid because their leader is maybe unpredictable, could be, great form one day and, have a real edge to their tone another day. Again, it can bring in fear and lack of safety. And so, that impacts on performance and a person's effectiveness and also their engagement levels and their commitment to the whole organization. So I think it's really important and probably more important than ever that leaders look after themselves in order to be able to look after their teams.
Yeah, sure. And as a leader, do you think lots of them are mindful of this? Like, I think if you asked most leaders, they'd say, yeah, I totally understand. I've heard that adage of, you have to put on your own oxygen mask before you put on everyone else's. Yeah. Are leaders good at knowing when they are not taking care of themselves?
That's a good question. I think at the very top level, you'll often see CEOs are very disciplined, getting up very early in the morning, perhaps to do their exercise, maybe meditating before they start their day. So at that level, particularly if you're a CEO of a large company, you have to take that responsibility for yourself, or otherwise you can't stay at that level. However, there are so many people, maybe from middle management upwards, where they're getting caught. They're working so hard for the company that they're not actually looking after themselves. And I think particularly this year, that's the risk with COVID, where people are, you know, getting up at early hours to try and get some work done, maybe before their kids are up or before they have to deal with the mayhem that's happening in their home. They can't escape that. So they're trying to cope with whatever's going on in the home situation for them, and they're trying to cope with teams. Now, when you're in the office, you can read, if you're tuned in, if you have that kind of intuitive radar to pick up on people's moods, as so many people do, you know when somebody's struggling. You can see it in their face, you can see it in the productivity, you can see it, you can feel it in the mood in the office in the morning. So you know who to target or who to check in with. That's sure. Much more difficult now when you're doing that remotely. You can't pick up the phone and ring every single person on your team every day to check in with how they're doing. And you might not even get to do that every week, depending on the numbers of people under you. So it has got more challenging. And I suppose I think a lot of leaders maybe not looking after themselves well enough, because the normal boundaries and routines that would have been in place, even if they had good practices beforehand, have probably, some of them have been lost this year with the huge change and disruption that has gone on.
Sure. And that's a really interesting point. What would be the typical signs, or are there typical signs of someone who maybe thinks they're looking after themselves but aren't?
Yeah, so very often people don't realize they're on the slippery slope until they kind of hit a wall. So exhaustion would definitely be one, and feeling stressed, feeling, you know, spread too thinly in too many different directions. Different people have different signs and symptoms of stress. It affects us in lots of different ways. Stress can impact on us physically. There may be aches and pains, maybe illnesses happening, you know, maybe lower resistance, lower immune system, which again is not something you want when there's a pandemic. People may be off sick physically. They may be just more irritable, having a shorter fuse. Maybe their whole eating pattern has changed. Maybe they're having the beer or the wine every night now just to help them to relax or to help them to get to sleep. Sleep is impacted for, you know, the vast majority of people quite quickly when they're stressed. So of course we all get stressed and we all go through bad days. But if this is happening over a period of time, then it's time to kind of take stock. And certainly, even by the beginning of our summer, I was seeing a lot of people hitting exhaustion. Now, August, it's hard to tell. A lot of people took some time off in August. And currently, you know, we're at the very end of August on that kind of brink into September where there's a kind of a restart. And yet it isn't our normal September. So there's a sense of, oh, thank God, at least the kids will be back to school. But there's huge fear about that. And there's fear about the routine. And there's a level, I think, as well of just frustration that this is going to be going on and on and on. And even if you don't have kids or school year or anything like that, they kind of starting ramping back up in September in any workplace and going into the winter and facing potential lockdown as the weather gets worse and as the evenings get shorter. It's just, there's a lot of different factors there that make it difficult for people. So certainly mood, increased anxiety, often lower mood, irritability, anger, frustration, impatience, maybe losing motivation, kind of just losing the will. All of those are very common symptoms of somebody who is struggling and maybe needs to take stock.
Yeah, and I suppose the logical follow-on question is, if you feel, well, two questions, if you feel that you are on that slippery slope, or an even harder thing to do, you feel your leader is on that slippery slope, what do you think is the best approaches?
So there are lots of things that we can do as individuals to look after ourselves. But depending on how far down that slope you've gone already, when we're in that low place, when we're already struggling and have been, or when we're kind of exhausted and burning out, at that point, it's very difficult to make the changes yourself. You usually will need some support. So whether that's, depending on your situation, whether you reach out to a counselor or a therapist or a coach, or maybe reach out to your direct line manager or somebody in HR, somebody that you find supportive in the workplace, that's often the first step, is realizing, first of all, that you're struggling, and secondly, you know, reaching out and looking for some support with that, because it can be very difficult to make changes when we're already feeling kind of exhausted and stressed. If it's your leader that you see is really struggling and is not themselves, and you know, again, no matter who it is and no matter kind of what level, everybody's just a human being at the end of the day. And we may be talking to somebody and seeing into their bedroom or their living room on Zoom, you know, but we still don't really know what's going on behind the scenes for them and what they're really struggling with in their home. So regardless of who it is, I would say if you think somebody is struggling, if you think that they haven't been themselves for a couple of weeks, don't leave it any longer. Reach out and just ask, are you okay? You don't seem yourself recently. I'm concerned about you. Is everything okay? Now, just a little word of warning about that. Just because you do that, and even if you do that perfectly, doesn't mean that the person is going to open up and spill their guts and, you know, use you as a support system. They may not, they may clam up, they may be defensive, they may not even have realized it themselves. Often, depending on their own kind of emotional awareness levels, they may be acting out and be angry, but not realize that that's what's happening. So it, just because you ask it, and even when you ask it, you know, as simply as that, doesn't guarantee that you're going to go in the right direction. However, it's still always worth asking that question, are you okay? As simple as that, checking in. And let the person know, even if they don't feel like talking now, or even if everything they're telling you, everything is okay. Well, that's great. That's good. That's all I need to know. But you know where I am if you need me. So you've reached out and you've let them know that they can approach you, that they can allow themselves maybe to be vulnerable with you, and that they know where to go if they do need support. And it may be that it takes a little while for it to sink in for them, even that, oh, right, okay, some, you know, at least one other person is noticing, so therefore maybe I need to do something about this.
Fantastic. I'm going to go back slightly to something you mentioned. I mean, you mentioned the people at the very tops of organizations can often be very good at this. As you said, they can be up early doing their exercise, doing their meditation, journaling, whatever their thing is. How can leaders be that example, maybe further down the chain? I think, you know, the CEO, you probably, you know, unless it's a public company and you have to answer to shareholders, you have very few people to answer to in terms of what you do with your time. How can leaders a little bit down the pecking order be that example to their own staff?
I think that's a great question. And, you know, particularly when we're working remotely, it's maybe harder for people to see. So certainly, you know, in office times, keeping office hours, and you can do this remotely as well, is trying to keep to more office hours, being clear with boundaries. So, for instance, not sending out work emails after work hours, because that can put people inadvertently under pressure to feel like they need to be responding to you because you've sent it out of hours, and then they feel like, oh gosh, they're working, I should be working too. So being aware of those kind of things, that you're not making, you know, even if you have had to completely change your working hours, and maybe you're working early in the morning and late at night when kids are gone, that's not the time then to be asking people. Or if you do have to do that, frame it in such a way that you're letting people know, I do absolutely not expect you to answer this until you're working in your working hours. So I think boundaries are extremely important. Your own state is the modeler and is really what's important. So any leader needs to be looking after their own state, their emotional state and their mental state, and also there to support others in whatever state they are in. So when it comes to modeling, I think a good leader, we all have vulnerabilities, and a really strong leader actually needs to be able to show their vulnerabilities every now and again. Let other people know that they're human. Hey, I struggle too. Excuse me, I'm on a bit of an off day today. Would you mind if I don't attend this meeting? You know, so it by you, with your behavior, you give permission to others to be vulnerable, to be human, to reach out for help as well. Leaders getting support and talking about how they get that support. So if your leader is working with a coach, for example, don't keep that a big secret. Let people know, well, you know, I had my coaching session yesterday and I was reflecting on this, for example. So it shows that you're reflecting, that you're learning, that you don't think you've just reached the top, you know, or you know everything, that you're always open to learning and bettering yourself really in your work. So there's lots of different ways that somebody might model, I think, that. But, you know, when we're working remotely, those kind of boundaries are really important.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing it more and more, like what you said there, Neva. We're seeing more and more emails that say something akin to, this is my working hours, I completely appreciate, they mightn't be yours, come back to me when you can. And then yeah. I've seen some more systematic sort of fixes for it on the continent. I think in France and in Germany, there's companies now whose actual email server will basically just stop delivering and sending emails between, say, 8 p.m. and whatever, 8 a.m. or whatever. So it just becomes impossible for anyone to do anything outside of those, which is
yeah, I think in France it's against the law to send emails outside of working hours. However, that was pre-COVID and working hours have changed. It's not as clear anymore. So absolutely, as you say, it's much more flexible and individual. So it's up to each individual to kind of keep to their own working hours and hold those boundaries, but they need to be respected by leaders as well.
Absolutely. And then I saw in typical tech company spirit, I saw one that all the desks were basically on pulleys, and the desks went to the ceiling at like a certain time in the evening, so you couldn't actually be at your desk. Now again, that was pre-COVID. I'll try find a link for that. Resilience, obviously we all react to this stuff differently. People are reacting to COVID in different ways, people are adapting to COVID in different ways and in different time frames. From your own background, you're pretty equipped to answer my next question, in that, you know, what part of that is inherent, what am I born with, and what have I learned, or what can I learn in terms of that resilience?
So what I would say is, okay, absolutely, some people, you know, just seem to be, and you can see it in kids, some kids are more fearful, more anxious, get more stressed, and others straight away are just cool as a cucumber and handle things easily. So there is some that's just inherent in our personality type. However, resilience is something that is developed, and emotional intelligence is generally developed over time. So if you have had a very sheltered and protected and easy life, you don't really get to be resilient. In fact, we learn resilience through having to draw on our strengths in times of difficulty. So by experiencing life and being exposed to, you know, whatever we get happens in our own journey, that builds our resilience. Now, it helps to have support along the way. If you have something traumatic happening, for instance, and you don't have support, then you can go really under and may suffer as a whole consequence, maybe, you know, for a whole lifetime potentially. However, that same traumatic thing happening to somebody else who has a support system, that is, who is believed in what happened, who is acknowledged, who is supported through that, whatever that traumatic thing might be, they can come out very resilient the other side. So support is extremely important in developing our resilience. But in general, you know, teenagers generally aren't that resilient, whereas the same person, take them when they're in their mid-20s or they're in their mid-30s, they've developed resilience. And it's similar then for emotional intelligence. So I think, you know, Forbes was predicting emotional intelligence to be like one of the top 10 most important things for leadership in 2020. Well, I think with COVID, it's probably pushed it even up further, because all of this comes down to our, you know, our ability to deal with stress, our ability to tolerate stress. It's not just managing and kind of getting on top of it, but there is at the minute such ongoing stress, such ongoing change, disruption. It's constant, and that creates stress. So our ability to really tolerate that and still, you know, be able to reach out to people, still be able to communicate, still be able to maintain the relationships with teams, still be able to maintain optimism. All of that is down to our kind of developing our emotional intelligence. And again, that's something that happens quite naturally. It improves with age, believe it or not, and with experience and with exposure to the world. But we can certainly get help along the way too. So even if you weren't born, you weren't a born optimist or born resilient person, you can develop it. And generally having some support along the way helps.
And can we, as leaders, can we structure that exposure, whether it be irrespective of what it is, can we structure that for employees to help them develop? So, I mean, people generally get the shivers when they're told they want to present in front of 100 people or give a wedding speech or whatever it might be. Is it that gradual exposure? Is that a realistic technique in terms of improving people's abilities in an area like presenting?
So in an area like presenting, yeah, it's often kind of building up skills and practice, lots of practice. So I suppose the best maybe model here that I'm just thinking of is the idea of the comfort zone, that we all have a comfort zone, and some people have, you know, presenting is within their comfort zone. So certainly now at this stage in my life, presenting is very easy for me. It's well within my comfort zone. Whereas when I started off, you know, that would have been outside my comfort zone. So I often think that there are things, everybody has stuff that's not comfortable for them, that's a stretch for them. So is it a little bit of a stretch, or is it so big that to do it would send you into a blind panic? And public speaking or doing a presentation is a very good example of that. So there are so many people who are uncomfortable with that, who that would make them nervous. And then there are some for whom it would send them into, you know, pure blind panic. So it's so far out of the comfort zone, in which case you're looking for, well, what's a little bit of a stretch? What could you stretch to? And practice that until it becomes comfortable. And then you're a little step closer, and that blind panic thing isn't as far off. So you you do the next step. Well, what's the next step now? Now that you're in this new, slightly enlarged comfort zone, what's the next thing that's just outside of that, that's within reach? And so you expand, and that, you know, with cognitive behavior therapy, that's the tenet there, really, that it's that gradual exposure. So if you were working with a phobia, for instance, of spiders, you're not going to land a spider in front of somebody straight off. At the beginning, it might be just even looking at a photo of a small spider, you know, to get them used to that and get them over that anxiety first, and you'd work up in steps. But the same kind of practice can be applied to anything that we fear, really, whether that is, you know, as in your example there, public speaking. So if leaders want to help their team to grow with a particular skill like that, then often it is maybe mentoring a person, giving them support. But we also need to find out, okay, where on that scale is that person's fear? Because you don't want to just land them in the deep end and they actually drown. You know, if they have a really negative experience and you've pushed them out onto a stage, you could do damage rather than actually build them up. So you need to pay attention to the individual and listen and acknowledge where they're at, where their starting point is.
You mentioned emotional intelligence a couple of times as we spoke. What exactly is it to you? When you say emotional intelligence, I think I've heard people talk about emotional intelligence before, and they all seem to have a different definition. What's your definition?
Yeah, I think it's quite difficult to put just a simple definition on it, actually, because it's really a collection of traits as such that can be developed and can be worked on. So at the very basis of emotional intelligence is emotional self-awareness. You can't really build any of the other skills within emotional intelligence without first building your self-awareness. And even people who are very self-aware still have blind spots. So there's no, you know, you don't ever just arrive at the perfect point with any of this. There's always room for improvement, I think. And some people need to do a lot of work on self-awareness. So you could have a leader who's highly resilient, who's highly capable, really good at coping with stress, unflappable, but maybe they appear cold to people. Maybe they seem unapproachable, or maybe it seems like they're superhuman and I could never be like that. And so, you know, maybe the team can't relate to them. Maybe that person is then intolerant of those who struggle or those who show signs of, you know, weakness, for want of a better description, because in that kind of person would use that language. So emotional intelligence really, it starts off with self-awareness and self-perception. And I work with the EQI 2.0 model. So there are different assessment tools out there and they'll have slightly different models. Daniel Goleman would have another, for instance. So they're well researched. But the one that I work with has five subscales, and within those subscales there are 15 so there are three subsets within each subscale. So it would be self-perception, moving into self-expression and how you then express those emotions, including like assertiveness, for example, that'd be very relevant in the workplace. Interpersonal skills is another area, and that includes relationships and how you are in relationships, and not just forming relationships, but maintaining relationships. And also empathy is another part of that, which again is a very important piece for leaders, and one that can be missing. Decision making is another part of emotional intelligence, and that's made up of three, such as, you know, problem solving, impulse control, for instance, and then stress management is the fifth subscale. So, and within that you have your stress tolerance, your flexibility, and optimism. So there are, you know, lots of different facets to emotional intelligence. And you know, it's not about saying, oh, I'm highly emotional intelligent and this person certainly isn't, you know, because everybody has strengths. We all have strengths. The interesting thing about strengths, though, is that strengths can also be overused. So let me think, you know, if even honesty, for example, you know, if you think of honesty, it's a lovely strength. It's one we respect. Honesty overused could be very blunt and may not be helpful at all. So it's not about getting top marks on all the scales either. It's about having everything in balance and having that awareness of knowing which strength to draw on at different times. Does that help?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just it's a fascinating area. And I think as you quite nicely articulated there, there's lots of different facets to it. In terms of leadership and what we originally were talking about in terms of how they can take care of themselves, I think it has, you know, direct implications of just, you know, that's even the self-awareness piece of that for me is so important. Whether that's aware of things like you're saying about, you know, how they come across, but in terms of self-care especially, it's like, no, actually, do you know what, I'm, you know, I have issues here as well. I'm struggling with COVID. I have to mind kids or whatever it might be for the individual. I think it's really, really important and really, really healthy that people realize it for themselves and can share it with their teams. And I always think that's a really good sign of a fantastic leader, is they're open like that with their teams and can be seen to not be perfect, if you like. What can people who are listening to this podcast today, if they feel, oh, do you know what, maybe I'm just not 100% at the moment, what sort of strategies can they implement now?
I think, you know, again, there are a lot of different self-care practices that we can look at. So that my model that I like to share with people is quite simply just one of called the energy tank, the idea that we all have an energy tank. And so when we're feeling good, your tank is full. and we all know what that feels like. But we also unfortunately know what it's like when our tank is kind of getting low and running on empty. And the danger with the tank, when it, if it's running on empty for too long, is that we go into burnout and we start experiencing physical and or mental illnesses. So, you know, particularly for a leader or for a parent or, you know, for all of us in different roles, really, if we want to be able to give, we have to have something in the tank. When our tank is running too low, there's nothing left to give. So the more people that you have responsibility for, the more you need to take responsibility to look after yourself. And so quite simply, there's two aspects to that. If we think of that tank as a little bit like a Burke boiler, it's got a tap down near the bottom, and the demands in your life are the outflow from that tap. So the more demands you have in your life, the quicker that tank is emptying and running out that tap. Okay. So when COVID came along, even if you had been really good at handling all your responsibilities, suddenly everything is changing. There's all this extra pressure. There's all this extra stuff to be organized. So you have this whole new set of demands, and everybody's water tank would have, you know, had a rush out because there's new demands. And so in times of stress, and particularly something like this, which is more ongoing, it's more like a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's not about just, oh, you know, a month or two and I'll be over it. And, you know, you could grit your teeth and you kind of get through it. We're talking like, you know, people are talking about the next year here, maybe possibly even longer. So when we know there's extra stress there, we actually need to be doing more to fill our tank at that time because there's more continuously leaving. So there's only two ways of really filling that tank. One, you can try and slow down the demands, try and reduce the responsibilities, or get extra help, or delegate, or resource, or get a cleaner, what a babysitter, whatever you can possibly get. All of those, of course, were difficult during COVID because you couldn't have anybody in. And the other is then that, so there's slowing down the tap, but there's also, once your tank has got low, even if you turn off your tap completely and don't do anything, you still need to fill that tank or you're not going to feel any better. So what is it that helps you to feel well? What is it that fills your tank? The very basics across the board would be diet, exercise, and sleep. And I can pretty much guarantee, Declan, that for any of your listeners, that anytime they're stressed, that at least one of those areas is thrown out the window, if not all three. You know, people have started, you know, particularly in the early days of COVID, people were eating and drinking like it was Christmas because they were home all the time and there's no, you know, there's no normal work week. And exercise went out the window for a while as well. And some people went the opposite and got really good because we did have that really good weather in the first few months of it. But either way, at this stage, we're kind of well into the COVID. We're, you know, we've been through lockdown. We may be going into a second phase. Some people already are, depending on where they're from. So diet, exercise, and sleep are always the foundation of your well-being and your self-care. They're the first things to get back on track with. If you're already looking after those three things and you kind of feel like you're on top of those three, but you're still struggling, then you may need to up your game a little bit and develop some other practices on it. And really, when I say that, I'm talking about, like, for example, meditation, maybe journaling, it may be getting support on a weekly basis, checking in with a coach or a therapist, depending on what's going on for you. Lots of different things. And often there, it's even about just doing one at a time and integrating that into your lifestyle. It's certainly not a good idea to go out and start three new things today because it's a bit like New Year's resolutions. They'll just all be gone down the toilet by next week. But, you know, even taking on one extra practice to improve the filling of your tank. And again, you know, people often think of big things like holidays. Oh, if only I had a holiday, my tank would be full again. Well, yeah, but very often you come back from holiday and 10 days later you forget you've ever been because you haven't really changed the day-to-day stuff. And so it's the day-to-day stuff that makes the difference. It's the little things that you do in a day-to-day. Getting up, to have that little bit of time to yourself, even getting up a half an hour earlier so you have some time to meditate before the kids get up, for example, or have some a cup of tea to yourself, looking out the window even, just that little bit of quiet time. It may be going to bed a half an hour earlier to, you know, just get that extra little bit of sleep. It might be getting tighter controls on finishing up work on time. It might be looking at how you can get more help at home or with work, or how you can delegate, or do you need to talk to your leader about, you know. So there's so many different things, and it's going to be very individual then once we... It's really looking at what's going to help you now. What do you need? What's going to help you fill that tank?
Yeah, very much a holistic approach, or an overview. I can't believe how little sleep is talked about, if I'm being honest. I read Why We Sleep. I'm not sure if you've read it, by Matthew Walker, I think the guy's name is. And that's, forgive the pun, but that was eye-opening in terms of the health benefits of sleep alone. It's very, very interesting read.
It's huge, because it's a whole domino effect. If you haven't slept well, and if that's ongoing, that affects your mood, it affects your effectiveness, your performance, your decision-making ability, your judgment. Oh, everything is impacted by sleep or lack thereof. So absolutely, it's a really important thing.
Yeah, to stay with your analogy of the tank as well, with sleep specifically, is there's no making it up on Saturday if you've been really bad all week. I'm going to jump back to one of the first things you said, Niamh, and that was to do with well-being programs. I think you said were typically not aimed at leaders and were more probably general for a whole organization, which I totally agree with you. Why, what would the justification be? What would the ROI be for an organization who did a special leaders wellness program?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because my experience has been that all these wellness programs are generally kind of across the board bottom-up programs, as I would say. And then at the top, you have leadership development programs. But leadership and wellness aren't often put together, funny enough. And yet, I think if you want, you know, if you want a healthy workforce and you want your people to be well, then you need to start looking at your top and, you know, what's happening from the top down. Because leaders set the tone, they set the mood, they set the culture, really, and the environment. There are many workplaces now when people are in the office where there might be a beautiful meditation room, but the culture is that you're not allowed to leave your desk. And if you are, there's questions asked or there's blame apportioned. So there can be lip service done to wellness within an organization too, but the culture isn't there to leave work on time or to take 15 minutes to go and have some quiet space. So again, it's from the top down that happens, that culture really is set. And even within teams, you know, any leader has that responsibility. It has a huge impact on, like, well-being. First of all, it's not just, wouldn't it be nice if everybody was in a good space? Of course, that would be beautiful. However, it impacts the bottom line. We operate at our best. Our brains are at their most intelligent. We're, you know, more innovative, we're more creative, we're more intelligent, we're more better problem solvers, we've better people skills when we're in a good place, when we are well, when we feel psychologically safe. And leaders have a lot of responsibility for creating the right environment to give people the best chance to be in that. Of course, there's stuff impacting on people that they bring in with them, that they have going on at home and all of that. And you can't separate out the two. But, you know, certainly it can be the difference between kind of make or break for somebody, you know, if that's happening from the top down in the right way. So I feel strongly that leaders need to be supported. It's not just about giving them the responsibility to do this. Most leaders that I talk to are really trying. They're really conscious of, particularly in COVID, of the struggles that people are going through and being careful, trying not to put too much pressure on them, and still trying to hit targets that so their team can make it and all have jobs. So it's a very difficult balancing act for leaders today. And so I think it's really important that leaders get that support. How, you know, often a leader can be quite isolated because they can't, it's difficult, you know, at a certain level to reach upwards for that support because you need to be showing the board or the C-suite that you're doing well and that you're handling things. It's difficult to, you know, a leader can show vulnerability to their team, of course, but they still have to cope and show that they can cope. So often a leader needs somebody safe that they can be open with, be vulnerable with, get this support along. And often that's where a coach comes in. So that support system is there. Or a program where the leaders come together, maybe from different backgrounds rather than with, possibly within company if there's a lot of psychological safety, but even from different companies, if they come together on a program where they feel supported by other leaders going through similar struggles as well. So I think there's a couple of ways leaders can do that, but I think that's really important that they do rather than just struggling on their own.
Eve, on that very positive ending, I think that's where we'll leave it. So my thanks to you for joining us today. I could talk about this stuff all day. I think it's really, really interesting. I think organizations are moving to a much better place on it. But I'm sure you'll agree, not quite there in a lot of cases. If people want to get in contact, Niamh, how can they get you?
Probably the easiest way. I mean, I'm on social media. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. There's regular videos with tips and tricks and lots of resources. And the easiest thing is just to go onto my website, mindworks.ie, and you can subscribe there and get lots of tips and tools. I'm going to be launching a program for leaders on exactly all that we've been talking about today in early October as well. So keep an eye out for that.
Brilliant.
So mindworks.ie. Yeah.
Sorry, cut it off there, mindworks.ie, and we'll link that below the podcast. Niamh, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure. Great talking to you, Declan.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.